Good morning, everyone. I'm going to call this meeting of the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency Regional Plan Implementation Committee to order. The date is Wednesday, November 18th, of the year 2020. It's 8:32, and we are having a virtual meeting today. And the first item on the agenda is the roll call to determine quorum. Maria, would you please take the roll?
Ms. Alding?
Here.
Mr. Bruce?
Here.
Ms. Gustafson?
Here.
Ms. Lane?
Here.
Mr. Lawrence?
Here.
Mr. Yates?
Here.
Mr. Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you. Now I'll review our virtual meeting rules for the day. To observe and participate in the meeting, go to trpa.org. And under announcements in the center of the page, click on Listen Live Governing Board November 18th, 2020 online meeting. Members of the public can find all meeting materials under Documents, Meetings and Notices, and November 18th, 2020 Governing Board Meeting. In order to participate in this RPIC meeting with your comments, please utilize the hand-raising function in the GoToWebinar platform at the appropriate agenda item. With your hand raised, you will be unmuted by TRPA staff and have 3 minutes to address the Regional Plan Implementation Committee. If you have contacted the TRPA for reasonable accommodation and received a unique PIN for dial-in, please make sure you enter that PIN so that you may be identified and unmuted by TRPA staff. If you are using GoToWebinar's Instant Join web app, please make sure it's opened in the Google Chrome browser and that you allow access to your microphone in order to be unmuted. If you're joining via the audio stream, please note this is a listen-only option. If you wish to address the Regional Plan Implementation Committee, you will need to log in via GoToWebinar on your computer, tablet, or smartphone. To our PIC members, if you wish to speak, please alert me via the chat function. If you are online or speak up, if you're calling in, please make sure you send your chat message to panelists and organizers. Committee members may only use the chat function to indicate the desire to speak. This function must not be used to have sidebar conversations. And finally, everyone remember to mute your mic unless speaking to cut down on background noise. The next item is approval of the agenda. Are there any changes in the agenda?
No, Mr. Chairman, there are no changes.
Okay, we'll deem the agenda approved as posted. And then the next item, which is usually pretty simple, now has an additional thing for me to search for. Sorry, guys. I'll get with the program here. So the next item is the approval of minutes, agenda item 2. And we have a set of minutes from September 30th, 2020. And staff has made some minor clerical edits to agenda number 4, the draft Tourist Corps area plan amendments in the city of South Lake Tahoe, and are requesting approval of the September 30th, 2020 minutes as amended. So if I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
Thank you, Shelley.
Bill, is my audio better?
Much better. Thank you, Shelley. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion passes. So that brings us to item number 3, the main item for today, which is possible discussion and possible direction to staff for amendments to chapters 2, 50, and 90 of the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency Code of Ordinances to address outdoor dining, outdoor seating uses. You can find that information on page 249 of the Governing Board packet. And now I'll pass it on to Mike Conger to make the staff presentation.
Mr. Chairman, this is John Hester, and I'm going to introduce this, try to set a little context. You may recall back in May when we brought you the Main Street Management Plan report that we identified we needed to address outdoor dining at some point after the Main Street Plan was approved, but that because of the COVID-19 pandemic, we had issued temporary guidance to allow people to expand the distance between tables, which led to outdoor dining. So we brought the idea to you that we would work on some quick code amendments to address that. I recall the board said that was great. Thank you for the being proactive about it. So what we have for you today is really kind of Michael will present sort of two tiers. One is a straightforward response to those two items that I just talked about, the Main Street Plan and the COVID-19. But there's some longer term, bigger changes that we probably need to make, but aren't part of this, but you have the option of giving us direction which way to move on those. So that's a little context, goes back to tell you where this came from. And so I'll turn it over to Michael now.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Michael Conger, representing TRPA Long Range Planning staff. The subject of this morning's discussion is outdoor dining. This is an informational item for discussion and direction to staff. Outdoor dining is an important component of creating active and vibrant streetscapes. At the same time, there's a lot of uncertainty as to how TRPA regulates these uses. Staff is here today to provide some background on TRPA's regulation of outdoor dining and to discuss a set of potential code amendments that start addressing that uncertainty.
Michael, you appear to be on mute.
I'm sorry, I didn't realize something must have happened there. I'll start off by talking a little bit about why staff is before you today to get feedback on a package of amendments. I'll briefly discuss current regulations and I'll present a package of potential code amendments. We can then go over some options for moving forward and start the discussion. Next slide, please. The 2012 regional plan update marked a major paradigm shift for planning in the Lake Tahoe region. One of the key strategies in the regional plan is to direct development towards designated town centers. Redevelopment efforts within those town centers, in turn, would focus on creating pedestrian-friendly environments. This strategy helps to reduce the frequency and length of vehicle trips while also enhancing environmental and economic opportunities. Outdoor dining is one of the many tools that can be used to activate the streetscape by creating visual interest and by helping transition adjacent development down to the pedestrian scale. Next slide, please. Commercial floor area is a concept that was originally established in the 1987 regional plan. So while the regional plan does promote active streetscapes, it also regulates growth using commercial floor area or CFA. Under this system, commercial uses, including outdoor commercial uses, require CFA before they can be established. The 2012 regional plan update maintained that 1987 development rights system. So we have both strategies in place. We have a growth control strategy and a strategy towards activating our town centers. With regards to outdoor dining, there's a lot of uncertainty around the regulatory requirements. Much of this stems from a lack of written code provisions addressing outdoor dining uses. Specific areas of uncertainty include permitting, coverage, and CFA. The lack of written rules has made it difficult to communicate clear requirements to the public, to business owners, and to our MOU partners. Right now, the line is often hazy. As these uses increase and intensify, the need to draw clear distinctions on permitting coverage and CFA grows. The uncertainty around outdoor dining came to a head this year as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. under public health orders, restaurants have been required to reduce their indoor capacity, which has led to an increased demand for creating additional outdoor capacity. To address this uncertainty, TRPA released a memo in May of this year to provide guidance for bars and restaurants looking to shift some of their existing capacity outdoors. At the same time, the Main Street Management Plan process was paused for work on parking management. So as part of the governing board update in May, staff indicated that we would change direction and start focusing on doing some outdoor dining addressing the outdoor dining requirements so as to help facilitate implementation of the Main Street Management Plan. The way TRPA currently administers outdoor dining stems from the need for additional commercial floor area. Under the regional plan, commercial growth is regulated using the growth control tool of commercial floor area. All new commercial activities, all new structures require commercial floor area. Over the years, code interpretations have resulted in creation of a narrow class of outdoor uses that do not require commercial floor area. Those outdoor uses do not require CFA when there are no commercial activities occurring outdoors, so no wait staff service, for example, and when there are no enclosed structures involved. In all other circumstances, CFA is required. An example of when CFA is not required is takeout style dining with no enclosed structures. Now I'll speak a little bit about the approach staff used in scoping a potential amendment package. This was largely an effort of balancing the regional plan strategy of growth control and creating active streets as envisioned through the Main Street Management Plan. While this is not a silver bullet solution, the package is meant to be a first step in addressing uncertainty around permitting, coverage, and commercial floor area by codifying current practices. The potential amendments that we considered are divided into those that would allow quick action and those that would require amendments to the regional plan or additional substantial environmental analysis. In following that approach, we identified three policy solutions that address outdoor dining and reduce uncertainty while allowing quick action by the governing board. The first is formalizing the unwritten standard for when commercial floor area is required and when it is not. Secondly, the proposal would introduce a new qualified permit exemption. This establishes parameters by which a project can be exempted from TRPA permits. And the third component is making the COVID-19 memo permanent by allowing restaurants to shift existing indoor capacities outdoors under a qualified exemption without requiring CFA. In addition to the code amendments, staff is preparing a guidance manual to advise restaurant owners on the qualified exemption process. Next slide, please. The proposal has a few different benefits. First, it reduces uncertainty by establishing clear standards. Having clear standards is important to making sure that we and our MOU partners are administering the requirements consistently. It's also important for business owners to know what they can and can't do before they invest in costly improvements. To help in this effort, staff proposes to develop a guidance manual that would accompany the ordinance. Secondly, the qualified exemption process provides us with a record that helps to track and monitor the permitted level of development. At present, it's difficult to discern what uses were properly permitted. And finally, the ordinance would provide additional flexibility to restaurants seeking to shift their existing indoor capacity outside on a more permanent basis. In reviewing the full spectrum of amendments, staff considered a wide range of potential solutions to encourage outdoor dining use. The first three solutions are included in the package we just outlined. The last four could be pursued, but would require substantial additional environmental analysis for which we have not budgeted. To focus on these solutions, we would need to allocate additional staff time, fund the environmental analysis, and extend the adoption schedule. Some of the policy solutions we're recommending to defer at this time include creating a full permit exemption, creating coverage exemptions, creating a new CFA exclusion, and establishing a pool of CFA for outdoor dining. Next slide. Staff recommends moving forward with the amendment package as described, as this can be acted on right away without requiring additional analysis and resources, and provides some clarity and reduces the uncertainty, incrementally moves us in the right direction. Alternatives that the committee may pursue include taking no action, expanding the scope, or pursuing a second phase when necessary resources are available. Next. This concludes staff's presentation. We're available for any questions and look forward to hearing any feedback and direction that you have. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. I took off my camera here a second. Okay. I would imagine this is going to have some comments. And Shelley, I see you have a comment. So go ahead, please.
Thank you. First of all, I want to thank staff for undertaking this effort. I think it's important, especially under current circumstances, to do everything in our power to assist local businesses, to enable them to survive the restrictions that are still in place in connection with the pandemic. But Michael, I had a question under Chapter 90 definitions. I find the distinction between outdoor dining and outdoor seating a little bit confusing. And so I want to propose something that might provide clarity and might be more easily interpreted by people who are relying on this provision to enable them to move some of their outdoor dining outside. To me, we're talking about dining. We're really not talking about seating. I mean, you can eat your food in your lap, and technically you're just sitting, or you can eat your food from a table, in a chair. So what I'd like to suggest is that there are two types of outdoor dining. One would be commercial outdoor dining, which would be defined using much of your terminology as the commercial use of an outside area by an eating or drinking place for the same activities that occur within the establishment. Commercial dining in outdoor or temporarily enclosed areas is commercial outdoor dining. And then non-commercial outdoor dining, which I think is what we're trying to accomplish here, so we can avoid, requiring that vendors get additional commercial floor area. That would be defined as the non-commercial use of unenclosed outdoor areas for seating, picnicking, or informal consumption of food brought from home or obtained from a nearby business, an unenclosed facility not served by waitstaff and where no commercial transactions occur is non-commercial outdoor dining. So I think that's what we're focusing on, right, is dining and moving some of the activities that would normally be contained inside an establishment outdoors so that they can continue to survive the pandemic.
That's certainly something your committee could consider. We did struggle with coming up with a term for what we landed on was outdoor seating. I don't see any issue with changing that terminology to non-commercial outdoor dining.
That would be great. I just think it would be easier for people to interpret when they're reading these code provisions, to determine whether or not what they're proposing to do is permissible and falls within the exemption category. So I'd be more than happy at the conclusion of the meeting to send you this language if the general consensus is by the committee that this is something worth looking at as a potential amendment.
Thank you, Shelley. I think I'll hold off and we'll see what other comments we have before maybe as a committee we decide what to do with this proposal. Jim, you have a question or a comment.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, listening to Shelley, I think I might have two questions now. Before I ask the questions, I want to echo, the sentiment from Shelley. I think this is absolutely critical, just for these businesses to survive during this time. So I really do commend as well the staff taking this on. The I guess I wasn't going to ask this question, but listening to Shelley, who made some good points, I guess I have a question. When we're talking about sort of outdoor, I mean, is the focus just dining? because when I think of outdoor seating, I think of some of the businesses here in Reno, such as hairstylists or things like that, that have actually put seating outside in order to meet standards. So I don't have a huge thought between Shelley's suggestion and what the staff's suggestion is. I'm going to make the comment here that I don't want those other outdoor retail establishments to be forgotten about. But I guess my question is regarding, you know, basically point number three in the staff summary, which is allowing restaurants to shift existing capacity outdoors without triggering CFA. Is it contemplated, and I apologize if I missed it in the staff summary, is it contemplated that there's going to be a time frame associated with it? The direction memo that TRPA came out with earlier this year tied it to basically COVID restrictions. I do think that, you know, going through the qualified exempt activity, there needs to be, as you pointed out, Michael, a high level of communication between the expectations of the agency and the retail establishment, so they know the rules that they're playing under. And so I'm trying to figure out with the qualified exempt, is it an open-ended type of thing, or is there going to be a time sort of period on that so that there's a check-in point? So thanks for letting me ask the question.
And I can respond. As proposed, it would be an open-ended. It would be an ongoing use. It would not be a time-limited use. So a restaurant could regularly, like as the seasons permit, expand outdoors and then reduce their indoor capacity at a similar amount.
Michael, this is John Marshall. Would you mind commenting on how the temporary activities section also might play into this?
Yes. So there's temporary activities that are exempt under the TRPA Code of Ordinances, but it's very limited as to what you can do under an exempt temporary activity. Beyond that, you can get a temporary use permit, and the temporary use permit, which I anticipate we'll be seeing for this winter. With the temporary use permit, you can actually create temporary coverage and temporary CFA without triggering the need for additional CFA or coverage. And you continue the temporary use. Well, the permit's issued for a 6-month period, and you can get up to 1 6-month extension. So theoretically, if you were doing it for winter use, you could do it for 2 winters under a temporary use permit.
So, Jim, I think, you know, what we were trying to do was kind of shift away from that exemption to allowing this kind of activity in non-COVID times. So if there's a way that if you want to expand your, you know, to enliven the streetscape, to allow that to happen indefinitely, essentially, if you follow the criteria within the QE. I think we're trying to look further on, not just, you know, who knows, I mean, fingers crossed, this is not going to be further out than 2 years, but we don't know, and this would allow these types of commercial businesses to move outside without having to rely on the temporary QE.
Thanks, John, and thanks, Michael. I think my comment here is, you know, as this moves forward, which I expect it will, you know, to continue to work on this, I personally would like to see some sort of time frame. I think sort of open-ended is going to put, I think we got some comment letters about this as well. I think it's going to put a real enforcement and monitoring burden in the long run. So I think, you know, like we do with temporary uses or temporary activities, there's an understood time period. Other QE activities are largely repairs of a permanent nature. So there's really, you know, not too much ongoing enforcement or compliance, but, you know, shifting capacity in and out of a indoor establishment, I think it could be problematic, you know, as the years go on regarding, you know, our development caps, which is basically a foundation of the 2012 plan. So my comment is to think a little bit about having some sideboards, just so between the agency and the retail establishments, there's a clear expectation. So that's my comment. Thank you.
Just if I could, Mr. Chair, to comment on Jim's point, I think that's, Jim, it's a great point. It's where we don't want to get into, you know, a situation where we're having to constantly monitor the inside business areas to see, you know, for these. So that's, I think, one of the major topics for, you know, the next phase, which would be, you know, really how should we be regulating CFA generally within areas where we want to enliven the streetscape and without generating these kind of, you know, potential enforcement issues.
Thanks, John. I agree with that concept and that goal. I think, you know, trying to figure out how to do that and, again, have a little bit of sideboards would be ideal from my perspective. But I'll just pass that on to the staff as that continues to be worked on.
Bill, you're muted. No,
Sorry, guys. I have another question from Shelley.
Thank you, Bill. So, Michael, there's a reference in the Main Street plan about pop-up shops for local vendors. Now, are those, I'm assuming those are seasonal, and would they fall under the qualified exempt category? Or, I mean, how are those going to be handled? I mean, to a certain extent, this is really not a pop-up shop, but it's similar in that you're moving, you know, the vending of merchandise onto the sidewalk. So what is the plan for permitting those sorts of activities?
Good question. So there's a couple different ways that can be handled. Well, first of all, shops, outdoor retail sales is a separate use in the code of ordinances. So they are regulated separately. It's different from the outdoor use associated with a restaurant. And they generally would require either a temporary use permit to operate, or they would fall under the exempt activities for exempt temporary activities. And then a third possibility, which I think is a likelihood in the Main Street area, is that we would establish a special event area, and the special event area would obviate the need for temporary use permits for that type of use.
And assigning the areas for these pop-up shops would be on a first-come, first-served basis?
Shelley, this is John Hester. I think what we're anticipating there is you might get a permit either on the California side, the city of South Lake Tahoe, or the Douglas County side. If they were managing an event, or whoever was managing the event, or if it was a joint by state, would probably get a master permit from us if it was, for example, to use an example, the Sparks Rib Cook-Off. They manage who gets what booth where, but they get the whole event permitted. And so that's probably something that would get addressed in more detail with the next phase of the Main Street Management Plan that TTD is supposed to work out with the two local governments. Who owns the right-of-way, who permits it and maintains it and that sort of thing. So that's another option besides the ones Michael mentioned.
Well, I think we need to maybe, I don't know whether there is currently a definition of a pop-up shop. I mean, there are pop-up shops associated with, you know, special events, but there are also existing vendors, for example, who move their merchandise onto the sidewalk, you know, for sales, that sort of thing. I don't know if it's envisioned that those would fall under the pop-up shop definition, but maybe we need to look at that. Also, my understanding is there is 15,000 square feet of additional CFA, right, for potential outdoor dining space in the Main Street plan. So some of the restaurants that might be using outdoor seating and dining temporarily to deal with the challenges of COVID could, in fact, continue those activities if they got, you know, applied for or received or purchased a portion of the 15,000 square feet of CFA. Is that correct?
Yes. And that was something we were talking about looking at in phase two.
Okay.
In fact, there's a CFA, as you know, there's a large CFA pool, and an unallocated large amount. And one of the things we were thinking about in the second phase is, should we take some of that pool and allocate it to these corridors that are in town centers for this very purpose? But that's something we're not prepared to recommend about today.
Okay. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Shelley. Cindy, you have a question.
I think Shelley hit part of my question. And then, again, I apologize if I missed this. But on the COVID situation, the timing of allowing people to move outdoors can be tied to the governor's emergency orders, I guess, from each state or to the most restrictive state, as far as putting that time limit on it?
Under the current memo we have, that's exactly how it's limited, is based on the orders.
Yeah. Okay, great. So sorry I missed that. And then I would just urge us all to be aware that, for instance, especially on North Shore, and I don't know what's South Tahoe PUD does, but I know on North Shore, restaurant seats are the tie to what sewer bills and treatment. And so we have our special districts monitor that very closely as well. And so working with them, I think will alleviate some of the concerns about how many seats aren't being used inside and outside at any given time, understanding that others are looking at that as well. And I'm just not sure how TRPA staff work with, for instance, TTSA and the local sewer districts on the North Shore to validate their inspection process, because then we don't have to do our own separate check on that capacity issue. They're doing that routinely, believe me.
we address that in the proposed ordinance. We address that with just a general requirement that you must comply with all necessary local requirements, including building code, fire code. That would also include special districts and water codes. We did not reach out to the special district specifically, but because I had not considered that particular issue, but that's definitely something I will do before we move forward.
Yeah, you know, my thinking is that coordinated enforcement of this might give some more, you know, we've received a comment letter from the league about, you know, that enforcement portion of it. And I do think that, you know, working with our local jurisdictions, both our counties, city, and our special districts, you can have some level of assurance that people are watching that for purposes of billing and other enforcement. So how we coordinate that was my only thought. Thank you.
Thank you, Cindy. Brooke, you have a question.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. my thoughts are kind of swirling on this because we don't know by the time the Main Street Management Plan gets to be actually boots on the ground, that could be, you know, at least 2 to 4 or 5 years from now. And we, none of us, you know, have that magic crystal ball that can see how that's going to relate with COVID-19. What we do know with COVID-19 is that we have been struggling with it for almost a year, and we've gone from, you know, purple to red to almost to yellow, and the situation just continues to move. And the concern that I have is that we put in place too many restrictions that cause people to have to jump through hoops for extended periods of time in order to get permits, when in fact what they're trying to do is survive and have their businesses survive. In the city of South Lake Tahoe, we have tried to be very nimble and responsive to our restaurants and their needs, and tried not to make extensive red tape. Who is going to, A, receive the applications and go through the checklist and issue the permits, and then B, you know, same question, who is the enforcer? And how is that going to be handled?
Well, with respect to the permits, TRPA generally takes on qualified exemptions for commercial purposes. I don't believe we have any MOU partners that do the qualified exemptions for commercial uses, but I could be wrong on that. And then we would also be the one enforcing the TRPA code of ordinances. But the way this is set up, effectively, if you are what we had termed outdoor seating, or what was Ms. Aldina's termed non-commercial outdoor dining, if you fall in that category and you're legally established before adoption of this ordinance, we wouldn't expect any further action from you at this time. But if you are the commercial outdoor dining, That technically is already non-conforming if you don't have CFA for that use. We're not, with the proposed ordinance, we wouldn't be changing the non-conforming status of those particular uses.
And just a follow-up question, or a follow-up question to that is, what does that turnaround time look like typically for TRPA?
Well, for the qualified exemption, there's not actually a permit. With the qualified exemption, you file a declaration of what you're going to do 3 days ahead of initiating the use. And then during that time, TRPA is able to review or screen the applications to see if there are any major issues that might push it out of the qualified exemption and require a permit. But absent that, you can carry on with the activities 3 days after filing a qualified exempt activity declaration.
Mr. Chair, this is John Hester again. It might help if I try to explain in a little bit more comprehensive way how we envision this working. And it's a lot like it works in other places. For example, Jim might be familiar with the Midtown area of Reno. There are a number of things that limit the capacity besides what we do. Like Cindy mentioned, the utility hookups, usually certificates of occupancy. So there are a number of other organizations or different parts of organizations that are looking at capacity too. And what we're really trying to do is, for two reasons, allow that fixed capacity to move in and out of the building. On a permanent basis, really. It moves in when it's bad weather, moves out when we want to activate the street when it's nice weather, but there's still the fixed capacity. So that's the concept that we and others would be enforcing the capacity, and if they could move in and out without needing CFA and coverage, that's fine. If they need CFA and coverage, that's something we want to try to address in phase two. But that's how we saw the pieces working together. And like Michael said, QE is a relatively straightforward process through TRPA. And we think it not only will work during COVID, but it activates the streets consistent with our regional plan and our area plans on a permanent basis. So that's really how we see it working. Obviously, there will be some tweaks based on comments from the committee and as we work through this, but that was how we saw the whole thing working over the long term. Hope that helps.
That is helpful. Thank you.
For those out in the audience who don't speak TRPA, a QE is a qualified exemption. Shelley, you had another question.
Comment. Well, more of a comment, Bill. Thank you. I know that under stakeholder coordination, ultimately there will be some sort of merchants association or a business improvement district. And I think that you know, I know in Carson City we have a bid in the downtown area, and there's a lot of self-enforcement that goes on, you know. I know that some people, for example, were concerned about allowing this temporary movement of dining outdoors, you know, and how do restaurants that have permits for outdoor dining, you know, are they placed at some sort of disadvantage? But I think that once a bid is in place, you're going to have merchants coordinating with one another and kind of, you know, not necessarily tattling on one another, but at least keeping track of what all the other merchants in the downtown or Main Street area are doing. And I think that the bid can help with enforcement issues. So, and I know that's long term, that's not immediate, and it doesn't address any violations that may result as a result of loosening up our, you know, our requirements with respect to offering these qualified exempt activities during COVID. But I think ultimately that's going to be, a lot of it's going to be self-regulating.
Thank you, Shelley. I don't see any other comments from my colleagues. And if there is, so you can speak up. What I think I'd like to do now, I think, Maria, you handling the public comment thing, if we would open it up for public comments on this proposal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll give it a moment to see if anyone raises their hand. Looks like we have, starting with Steve Teixeira.
Morning, Steve.
Go ahead, Steve.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, if I could ask Maria if Lou Feldman is on the line.
Yes, he is, Steve. He also has his raised hand.
Yeah, I would prefer if Mr. Feldman had an opportunity to go before me.
I'm within the virtual world. If we can organize that, that'd be fine.
Thank you.
Lou, you've been unmuted if you'd like to go ahead and speak.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good morning on a rainy, snowy day in the mountains. What a year, geez. In any event, I wanted to thank Mike Conger and John Hester for teeing this up. This is a remarkably awkward, you know, moment in time. And I appreciate the agency's, you know, effort to be responsive to the food and beverage community, which is, you know, fundamentally on life support. This has, you know, taken resources and stretched them thinner than I think any of us can ever recollect. And certainly these interim measures to enable businesses to navigate this extraordinarily difficult time is a very positive step. There is a much, in my view, bigger issue with CFA and dining. And, you know, for 30 plus years, you know, I've watched, you know, TRPA try and manage this fiction about, you know, if you have outdoor seats and there's wait service, you probably maybe should have CFA, but if you don't have wait service, you don't need CFA. And, you know, that's never worked. It's never been enforced. It's, you know, it's kind of a credibility issue because I think we all think that outdoor dining that activates, you know, the areas and a resort community is positive. So, you know, on the interim basis, obviously being flexible and responsive to the challenges that folks are trying to actually save their businesses is laudable. But this next phase, I was, you know, quite frankly, disappointed we didn't accelerate this conversation and recognize that, you know, a restaurant that can serve indoors and outdoors shouldn't have to cut itself off at the knees and say, you know what, I'm going to reduce my indoor capacity because people would rather be in fresh air. But, you know, if business is good, you know, maybe they'll sit indoors and I can actually make some money. So I respect, you know, John Marshall's earlier comments. I know John Hester understands this. I'm not suggesting that you all don't, but, you know, the longer term solution here is to look at this pool of 400,000 feet of unallocated CFA and reconcile this discrepancy between us trying to animate and activate public places and not, you know, look the other way, but, you know, legitimize it, because a lot of this has been permitted even though TRPA has been MIA. So it's, I think, time to kind of, you know, correct and direct and allocate the resources that staff is indicating are required for us to solve this problem on the longer vision. I'd be pleased to answer any questions that any members of the committee may have and appreciate the opportunity to comment.
Thank you, Lou. Maria, any? Who is next in the queue now?
Steve, go ahead.
Thank you, Maria. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, Steve Bechera, on behalf of Tahoe Chamber and our South Tahoe Restaurant Association. As Mr. Feldman has pointed out, and as all of you know, this has been a particularly challenging time for many businesses, and certainly restaurants are lead among them. And I, too, appreciate the agency's efforts to try to address the lack of clarity on some of these issues. But I think we need to be thoughtful in our approach. And one of the things that the TRPA has done successfully when faced with challenges such as this in terms of ordinance amendments is convene a stakeholders group or a workshop so that those who are directly affected, the restaurant owners and operators, the people that own the properties where they are, can be part of the solution and can point out some of the day-to-day operating challenges that they face. Mr. Feldman talked about several of those. So I'm concerned right now that this approach in its initial form doesn't necessarily reduce uncertainty. And that's something we do want to try to reduce. I would agree with Council Member Lane's comments that you know, the city, as an example, has been very responsive to the flexibility that restaurants have needed this year to continue in operation, and that we ought to be mindful of that same need for flexibility and thinking about it in terms of TRPA code. So we don't want to create more red tape. And just, you know, again, to point out, and this week being an unfortunate good example, the changes, we went from orange at the beginning of the week in El Dorado County to purple as of noon yesterday. You know, so the changes that restaurant owners face in terms of trying to operate vary greatly. And that variability needs to be contemplated as we move forward. But the thought I wanted to leave you with most importantly would be the importance of convening a stakeholders group or having a workshop or two so that some of the people that are at least some of the people who are directly involved can be part of the discussions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, for your time.
Thank you, Steve. Any other comments, Maria?
Mr. Chair, I do not see any other public comments.
Okay. I'll bring that, close the public comment and bring it back to the board. Here, for about 6 years of my life, I was the Coastal Commission's lobbyist. And the biggest challenge I had always was when the commission, well-meaning as it was, got really down in the weeds of issues that were really probably more local government's responsibility. And the legislature got terribly impatient at times when we got into that mode and would introduce legislation that I had to deal with that would exempt certain activities from the Coastal Act. But generally, we would do things to change the way we looked at these policies. And I find myself revisiting my thoughts about that when I started thinking about what we're doing here. And I understand what my staff is trying to do. They're trying to get clarity. There's a real concern. COVID is just driving us crazy. We've heard it from Steve and from Lou about how people are trying to survive. We've heard it from Brooke Lane as a city official, and in parts from Cindy as to whether, you know, hey, have you guys thought about these other things? And I do think this is kind of like when I raised the question of why do we treat commodities the way that we did? And so we created a development rights working group. We sat down with all the stakeholders and we dealt with this issue and we came to consensus on how to deal with commodities in a different way that allowed us to implement our regional plan. And I think this is that kind of issue. It's one that's, you know, has been declared by some that we're missing in action. Well, whatever. I think that we need to get a consensus on how to deal with this particular issue. And the only concern I have is I don't want to disrupt the nimbleness that the city and maybe the two counties and not the two counties, the two California counties, but the others, how they're dealing with this issue in COVID, considering how we're being whipsawed all the time by the virus. If we do need to enact something or have a recommendation from our pick that would help with this. But if, in fact, we have this memorandum of understanding, we're following the state's leads on the restrictions, then maybe we don't need anything in particular right now from our pick. And I don't know how we'd make the recommendation because there's just really so many questions that I would prefer that we replicate what we did with development rights and would like to hear what staff thinks about my proposal.
Mr. Chair, this is Joanne Marchetta. And let me just comment on that. I think that the question we're trying to get direction on is, should we take an incremental step that swaps indoor CFA for outdoor CFA right now, which is a net zero? We can do it quickly. We can do it in a qualified exempt category without further environmental analysis. Staff wholly agrees that there is more to be done on this, but should we take an incremental step right now that takes us out of the uncomfortable situation of seeing activity that is right now inconsistent with our code and puts all of that activity in conformance while we think about how to then staff and fund a longer planning need, particularly in light of the Main Street Management Plan that's coming. So we can look at that longer term action, but should we take an initial action, an initial increment that brings so many of our businesses into conformity now and takes us out of a detailed temporary permitting set of activities and makes it much easier for business to come into compliance right now.
Thank you, Joanne. I appreciate you stepping up. I think that's my colleagues, how do you feel about that? Do you want to punch the chat thing and have further dialogue about what you think our pick should could do at this point?
Hey, Mr. Chair, this is Jim.
Go ahead.
I do have a question. Thank you. And thanks, Joanne, for the explanation. Maybe the caffeine hasn't kicked in for me yet. What I understand is we have a situation under COVID where the agency's given direction through a memo that basically allows for the shifting of indoor to outdoor as long as, you know, Cindy pointed out, as long as the, you know, the governor's declarations are in place, and that's the end, and that's the end time frame. So, and my understanding is that's happens pretty simply, that there's not a lot of red tape to do that right now on November 18th. So I have no concerns about what we do during COVID. I think it's absolutely essential to keep these businesses going. I'm concerned about a long-term, maybe slippery slope without accounting for the CFA, as Lou Feldman pointed out. I'm really concerned about a long-term slippery slope regarding our development caps without having some procedures in place. But I am struggling with what is the immediacy of doing something now during COVID when we already have something in place that allows for businesses to do this. I think I'm missing something, but that's not gelling in my head. So thank you.
Joanne or John, do you want to respond? I share that concern too. It seems like we're trying to fix something that may not need to be fixed right now, but the bigger issue would be something that we should roll up our sleeves and deal with.
So, Mr. Chairman, this is John Hester. Just let me play a scenario out where we think it would be good to have this code. Say in 6 months, say June 1st, summer dining season, the COVID, the vaccines have been distributed, and it's hopefully starting to become a memory. We will now be back in a situation where, as Joanne explained it, swapping your CFA from inside to outside will no longer be legal per our code. So that's why we wanted to change it. It's a first step toward implementing the Main Street Management Plan, as I tried to explain last May. It doesn't address the CFA issue that Lou and Steve and others have talked about, and that, I think, is part of what we'd want to look at over the long term. But it's not just a COVID response that's handled by the memo. If we didn't have COVID, the people who had moved dining outside last summer were in violation if we didn't have COVID. So it's an incremental step. And I think you heard Lou and Steve say, good, you're taking the incremental step, take some more. And so I don't want to be redundant, but it's like Joanne said, do you want us to take an incremental step in the right direction or wait and do this all in a bigger effort that will come later?
This is John Marshall.
So what's your... Well, if I could, just for a moment, John. So it's a qualified exemption. It's if, you know, it is kind of wishful, I think, John. But nonetheless, if in fact this summer... due to the miracle of a vaccine and the fact that, let's just say 75% of the nation might agree to taking the vaccine, that things go back to normal, that restaurants would be out of compliance. And so the qualified exemption, the part that you, we're teasing out from this full discussion, would be something that would allow us, with a 3-day qualified exemption process, allow a restaurant or a bar, someone to, or a business to maintain their outdoor activity without being out of compliance with our code. Is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you, John. John Marshall?
Yeah, just to kind of get directly to Jim's point, there is no immediate need for this. Okay, we are implementing the definitions as we set forth. We have our COVID memo that, you know, as your attorney, I'd much rather have that in code than you know, just as general direction from the ED. But so there is no immediate need for RPIC to take action. You know, as John described early on, this was in response to, you know, a presentation to RPIC earlier where, you know, you all kind of agreed with the direction to kind of take a stepwise approach. But if that's not the desire of the committee, We will continue to apply the definitions as we have set forth, and the COVID memo will stay in place until the governor's emergency declarations are removed. And so there is no immediate need for this, except to provide one, greater clarity to the regulated public and other stakeholders so that they see in code what those interpretations are, that we have an implementation guidance memo, and that if we want to continue the switching of indoor to outdoor out in the future, that would be in place. So that's probably the best I can do is whether or not we need to do something immediately. The answer is no, but also realize that I think given what's on our plate and something that Joanne and John were talking about, given what's on our plate in the next 6 months, a stakeholder effort to try to address larger CFA questions is a pretty big lift that may cause other things to drop off. So that's another way of saying, do you want to take this step now, realizing that that effort is going to be, it's not going to happen immediately. Or do you want to just, continue on with the way we're implementing this and direct, that we try to package all this up together sometime out in the future.
Thank you, John. I appreciate that. I notice I've overlooked a couple of my colleagues. Shelley, you had further comment.
Thank you, Bill. I have no problem with an incremental approach to this. I think it may be symbolically important, that the agency take notice of the problem and make at least an interim step to remedy it and provide guidance to people who are in the restaurant business who don't want to find themselves at odds with the agency. I mean, I don't see any downside to this, to be honest with you, based on the fact that, everybody seems to be committed to the idea of, diving into this in more depth with a stakeholder group to perhaps refine the proposal and look for a more permanent solution. So as far as I'm concerned, this is an incremental step, and I think that, frankly, it has some value.
Thank you, Shelley. Brooke, you had you said you wanted to chime in. Feel free. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that from the city's standpoint, longer view, we would be very supportive of an incremental process. But right now, today, the city staff in particular are feeling that this possibly could act as a disincentive and discourage business. We would like the opportunity to approach this from a stakeholder standpoint, to have TRPA reach out to the city, the public utility district staff, et cetera, and really brainstorm this and flush it out a little bit better, given the fact that it's not significant that we do something right away. I think everybody would feel more comfortable having this broader discussion and coming to some terms before TRPA actually codifies this.
Thank you, Brooke. I appreciate those comments. I still am at a loss. I think from the standpoint of our general counsel saying that we really don't need to do something now, and we could have, if we need to have something miraculous happen this summer where all of a sudden we were back to normal, we could then adopt, the governing board could adopt the qualified exemption process to make sure that we don't have businesses out of order. And I really am concerned. I appreciate the fact that staff is concerned about, we don't even know what our own budgets are going to be and how much time this would be. But I do question, especially when we've adopted area plans with increased opportunities for these kind of activities in town centers. The whole purpose behind the Main Street Management Plan was to get things out on the street and make more of a pedestrian friendly and out, just a whole different feel for that Main Street. And so that really seems to me the kind of discussion that we would have in a development rights kind of format. How we would balance that, I don't know. But I leave it to my colleagues if someone wants to make a motion or something as to what direction from the committee. But I'm not sure we need to do anything.
Bill, I think Cindy has her hand up.
Cindy does have her, yes, and Joanne had a clarifying comment too regarding immediacy. But Cindy, go ahead.
Well, I'd like to hear Joanne's clarifying comment. Might answer my comment.
Okay, Joanne.
Regarding immediacy, I think there's an important distinction. I believe that John's answer regarding immediacy went to the issue of legal immediacy. No, we have a guidance in place. We can act upon that guidance. But when I think about what it takes us to actually move through a decision, so we're trying to be proactive on an issue that we know is creating noncompliance. It takes us at least 2 to 3 months. So if we have to confront this question again in the spring, say perhaps governor's orders are amended by then, and we have to act quickly, we're trying to get out ahead of that so that we can give our businesses here some real certainty, both during this winter season. Some of them, I imagine, are going to be very creative about how they maintain their food and beverage this winter, as well as we move into the spring. So at a policy level, I'm not sure I agree with John on the immediacy question, which is why we brought this as an incremental step. But if what it means to take on a much larger planning exercise means it just simply takes longer. And if we load a lot of environmental review on this, this isn't a quick action anymore. It's a complex action that will take time. And I have enough experience to know that time on an action like that, could be beyond next spring and summer season.
I agree with you. I think it took us 2 years to do development rights. So, Cindy, your comment.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm trying to thread the needle here, not being as familiar as the rest of you are with the processes. I certainly think meeting with stakeholders could happen relatively quickly with a meeting on North Shore, a meeting on South Shore with the various agencies and businesses, and move that part forward relatively quickly. I don't begin to understand the complexity of this, but I do want to have us continue to move forward. And I really appreciate staff bringing this because, unfortunately, none of us feel very optimistic that a vaccine can be widely distributed and/or that people will take it and that we won't continue to have issues long into the spring. And I think Joanne's absolutely right. We're going to continue to see pressure. And I think the agency staff is rightly trying to get ahead of this, and I so appreciate that. So not sure how to word a motion. I'll let someone else do that, but I would really like to see us continue moving forward to address this with the additional public process and some well thought through structure on public input stakeholder.
Well, Cindy, I think I appreciate you trying to thread that needle because I think you've got pieces of that. I don't know how formal a recommendation from this committee might be, but it sounds like from what you're saying is a possible motion would be that we would accept staff's recommendation to move forward with the incremental approach, but holding at least a couple of workshops, at least north and south, to get feedback from those that would be affected by even this incremental change. Is that accurate?
Well said, Mr. Chair.
Well, if someone wants to make that motion, we'll just see how it flies. We're getting a little late into ops right now.
Well, Bill, I don't know that we really need a motion. I mean, we need to give staff some direction. So I would suggest that I would like some refinement in the language and the terminology. As I indicated earlier, I think that we can do this in a less convoluted way. And I will share my comments with Michael, but I would suggest that direction to staff be to pursue this, refine the language, pursue the code amendment with the understanding that this is an interim measure only, and that ultimately we want to convene stakeholders groups to come up with a more permanent recommendation.
So Joanne, John, or both Johns, is this sufficient direction for you to move forward? I mean, it's been a good airing of the issue, but I'm not sure. But
yes, how do you feel? I would say this is sufficient direction.
Okay. Thank well, thank you. We're ready to move on, Bill, as soon as you get your script together here. I think that will close this item, and we'll move on to item four. If there's any committee member comments beyond the comments that have already been made today, I don't see anything on the chat. So I go to the final public interest comments. Maria, is there any comments?
Mr. Chair, I'm just taking a quick look here. And it looks like we have no public comments.
Thank you, Maria. And so I guess I'll accept a motion to adjourn.
Bill, I move to adjourn. And just as a note to those who might be tuning in for the Operations Governance Committee meeting, we will convene that meeting at 9:50.
Okay. Thank you for doing that. So we're on the same program, but 9:50, the Operations Committee will be a meeting. Thank you. We're so adjourned.